Tens of thousands of Palestinians protested at the Gaza border this weekend. The protests marked the one-year anniversary of the Great March of Return demonstrations that have taken place every week since last March. Despite an Egyptian-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, Israeli forces responded with tear gas, rubber bullets, and live fire, killing four Palestinians and wounding hundreds more. Felicia Schwartz is Israel and Palestinian territories correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and she joins us now from Tel Aviv. Felicia, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us the backstory to these protests? Let's start there.
So ever since the end of the 2014 war in Gaza, conditions in the Strip have gotten much worse. They faded from international attention, and Hamas and many of the residents of the Strip calculated that another war might not achieve the ends that they're seeking because three wars in the past decade have failed to really improve things there on the Strip. So it started as a sort of homegrown protest movement calling for the right to return to land that's now Israel. Hamas sort of seized on those protests and began to kind of bus people to the border last year. They coincided with the embassy opening in May. There were about 40,000 people gathered on the border. They turned really violent. People were throwing grenades, explosive devices. I believe about 60 people were killed by Israeli forces who said they needed to respond with live fire to keep people from reaching the fence. And since then, they've been happening every week, mostly smaller. But then again, on the one-year anniversary, there were again about 40,000 people at the fence. Four people died, and the Israeli forces did use live fire, but they were much less violent than they had been over the past year.
Now, we have news that an Egyptian ceasefire deal may be in place. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so for the past week, as both sides were kind of gearing up for what seemed like it could be an escalation, Egyptian mediators have been shuttling between Gaza and Israel to reach a longer-term understanding that would see conditions sort of ease in the Gaza Strip, more electricity, more water, opening up the border crossings more. We started to see the early signs of that here. There was a fishing zone that was expanded earlier today to 15 miles, which is the biggest fishing range allowed since the signing of the Oslo Accords. Apparently, it's only 15 miles in some parts of the Strip. But I think in the days to come, we might see more electricity, more goods flowing to the Strip. But again, I guess I've been covering this over the past year, and we've seen other efforts at a broader ceasefire that have fallen apart. So I think it's just a little early to tell. But I think both sides are very weary of another war after three basically kept the status quo in place. And conditions in Gaza are getting really, really dire. And they're much worse than they were a year ago. The economy is really struggling. People on the Strip are really suffering, especially because there's this internal fight between the Palestinian Authority, which controls the West Bank, and Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip. They had entered a power-sharing agreement over the past year that hasn't worked, and the PA has been sanctioning the Strip, cutting the budget by about 50%, withholding funds. So people there are really, really struggling, and life is really, really hard.
How do Gazans feel about Hamas these days?
So they protest. It's really rare for Palestinians in Gaza to protest Hamas, because it can be really dangerous to do so. But last month, hundreds of people took to the streets, especially in the refugee camps where it's quite poor. They took to the streets to protest the cost of living in Gaza, and they called on Hamas to improve things. Hamas cracked down pretty quickly. They jailed over 1,000 people. There were reports of protesters, journalists, and activists being beaten. There were lots of photos in social media circulating of people, you know, with bruises and cuts and broken limbs. So I think there's a real frustration that, you know, things really haven't gotten better. They've gotten much worse.
And of course, we know that Israeli elections are a little over a week away. What are we expecting now with this current situation? How could that impact elections?
I've been going to campaign events in recent weeks. It's definitely something the candidates get asked about. Benny Gantz was the chief of the army in the last Gaza war with sort of a mixed record. Netanyahu has been the prime minister for the past decade, so you know, the successes and failures of the Gaza policy also lay at his feet. There are challengers to Netanyahu's right who are calling on him to respond to what's going on in Gaza more forcefully, like Naftali Bennett, who is complaining that, you know, Netanyahu didn't convene a security cabinet meeting. Gantz, who's Netanyahu's main opposition challenger, his party also has two other former chiefs of staff of the army who are, you know, criticizing Netanyahu for losing deterrence in Gaza. What exactly they would do seems a little unclear, but they say that they would want to kind of get Israel's deterrence back. So I think just depending on how it develops this week, we'll have to see how much it factors into the campaign. If for some reason the ceasefire doesn't hold, I think it will be a main kind of dominating factor in the last days of the election. Polls close on Friday, so it could really, you know, steer things one way or the other. But I think if it does hold, then maybe the conversation will look more to quality of life kinds of issues, cost of living, those sort of things. When I first moved here, you know, people kept telling me, you know, a day in the Israeli election cycle is like a year. And I wasn't totally sure what they meant, but I think it is a place where there's so many issues that voters have to worry about that just depending on what happens that day can really change things.
Felicia Schwartz is Israel and Palestinian Territories correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Felicia, thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.